to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God.
Okay. Public comment period. And we have no members of the public here tonight, so we'll close the public comment period. Approval of the minutes of the May 11th meeting.
I move that we approve the minutes of May 11th.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Go to item A1, presentation on the Central Public Service needs.
This evening, I'm pleased to introduce Chief Mike Pond. I think most of you know him. He's the chief of our fire department. He's been on the road with his show for a couple of months now, and he's going to be talking to us a little bit about the essential public services needs in the city. Welcome.
Thank you, Andrea, and thank you, Parks and Rec Commission, for allowing me to speak tonight. It's always good to be able to speak to a new group and get the issues of the city known. What we're looking at is the potential for a new revenue source in the community, and the council is going to be considering a half-cent sales tax increase. So at this time, we're trying to ascertain the public's opinion, their priorities, and any other information that they would like the council to take into consideration when they're looking at the potential of putting this issue on the ballot. At the end of my presentation tonight, I'm going to hand out some surveys. Typically, we get those back right away, but as you have additional business to attend to, maybe you can turn those into Andrea, and she can get those to Bridget. That would be very much appreciated. If there's anybody else out in the public that would like to fill out a survey, they can have me looking. This is the potential emergency on the horizon. There are so many unmet, unfunded issues in the city that we're going to come to a point where it's going to be critical, and we're either going to take a path where things get very bad, or we're going to make a choice to improve revenues and improve and hopefully maintain the service levels that we have now and restore some that we've lost in some of our departments. I'm going to start off talking about the fire department, something that's near and dear to me, of course. I think most everybody knows about our situation. We've been in tents now for 2.5 years, ever since the San Simeon earthquake of December 2003. The facility that was damaged was a 70-year-old facility. Was deemed to be no longer habitable as far as our apparatus-based structure, and we've been working, trying to find funds ever since. We're still working, and even if we do receive some grant money from the state, there still is going to be a large portion that will have to be funded by the city. Additionally, beyond that fire station, we are looking at rehabilitating our North Morro Bay Fire Station. We had an ad hoc fire services committee look at the fire service in Morro Bay. We also had a 5-year strategic plan developed by Hunt & Associates. Both the committee and the report recognized the need for reducing response times to North Morro Bay. Our headquarters fire station does a great job on the south end. It provides a good level of service, but because our community is long and slender, it requires that second station to be staffed. And currently, there's no money for staffing a facility in the north end. One of the things that's really pressing in the fire department right now is we find that it's very critical that they be in a pristine condition. Typically, a fire engine is replaced after 10 years. It moves to a second out status, and we extend the life by another 10 years. So we get a 20-year use out of most fire engines. So currently, our first out engine is 11 years old. That's our newest. Then we have a 23-year-old reserve engine and a 23-year-old ladder truck. So essentially, in the next 9 years, we need to replace all three of those vehicles, and we're looking at about $1.5 million worth of fire apparatus. Currently, in a depreciation account, there's only $40,000. We had been putting, for 2 years, about $20,000 in, and then when we ran into the budget crunch here, it's been zero the last 2 years. So at the rate we're putting it in now, we could fund an engine maybe 30 or 40 years from now, so that's not quite going to cut it. And a ladder truck in and by itself is $750,000, so they're not cheap. Additionally, in the fire department, there's a myriad of equipment that we need to maintain and replace, and the city is struggling with every budget trying to meet those needs. here's a good example of what I'm talking about as far as our aging fire facilities. Our tents in the upper corner, the left-hand portion of the fire station was built in the 1930s. It was originally a house and was converted then into Santa Maria Gas Company building and then a first aid station before becoming the firehouse. The right-hand side was the damaged portion in the earthquake. That apparatus bay originally was built by the Navy down on the Embarcadero in the early 1940s. It was utilized through World War II. Once it was realized to be surplus down there, they moved it up to the current location, late 40s, early 50s. The white roof, flat roof part in the back there, that's the Sunshine Donut Shop that was moved in there in one of the bathrooms. So council's finally decided it's time to get out of there, so they have, with reserve funds, purchased a modular structure that's going to go across the street as a temporary housing for the firefighters, and then we'll live there until the city establishes funds to replace this facility. Besides the fire department, there are a lot of other issues within the community, and one of those is our streets. The city owns 50 miles of streets, and approximately a third of those need some major repairs. Currently, the city's street staff is so small, they are pretty much chasing potholes. They're not able to do any extensive repairs, but they'll go out around after the storms and look for new potholes and try and extend the life of the roads. Another thing that they've been doing is a slurry seal. You've probably seen them do that where it's oil and rock mixed together. That'll provide a nice surface and extend the life of a road for a short period of time, but it's not doing the type of repair that the roads really need in the substructure of the asphalt surface. So that's another place where, you know, general fund money just isn't there to do any extensive work. Graphic example here, the entrance to Morro Bay, you see the potholes, and that's what people coming to visit our city are seeing. Fortunately, right before the car show, that two-man crew was able to get out there and patch these potholes, so it was at least a smooth ride into the city. But as we all know, those patches are temporary, and they'll be back out there again. Other needs in the community, lots of infrastructure needs. You know, the Parks and Rec Department is fortunate to have a nice facility here, but if you look at the rest of the city, whether it be the Harbor Department building, the Dial-A-Ride building, City Hall, the fire station, your plan for reducing pollution that runs off into the waterways. And what waterway do we have? We have this pristine bay and Pacific Ocean that we're trying to keep be good stewards and care for it, but currently the only thing the city is able to do as far as that seven-year pollution reduction plan is provide street cleaning with a street sweeper, picks up particulate matter and oil drips and things like that, keeps some of that from going into the bay, and we have the little signs painted on the inlets that say don't pour, everything goes to the bay. But still, the first rain of the year and every subsequent rain, anything that's dripped out of your car, whether it be oil, gas, any type of hydrocarbon, all flushes right down into the bay. So it's something important that we see. We need to get the fossil fuel filters into those inlets and prevent that flow to the bay. Many people I've spoke with think that those storm inlets lead to the sewer system, but the fact is they don't. They are just, it carries the water off the streets, off the gutters, off the sidewalks, and just carries it down to the ocean. Other things that we haven't been able to keep up with are right here in Parks and Rec. Parks and Rec has lost programs. They've lost personnel. They're not maintaining the bathrooms on the Embarcadero nearly as well as they used to. Facilities as well. People were in all those city facilities much more often than they are now, but because of the reduction in the workforce, we are not seeing the same level of maintenance. So it's important for us to restore the positions and the funding back to the Parks and Rec as well. Also, the police department. In the last 2 years, the police department seen a reduction of 4 employees, including the we haven't seen since the 1970s. Essentially, over the last 30 years, both departments are at the same staffing levels as 30 years ago. Here's an example of our inlets to the bay. You can see we've got the painted on signs that say dump no waste, drain straight to the bay. That's our pollution reduction method. And it's worked. We used to go on calls where people were changing their oil, dump it into the drains. We don't see that very much occasionally, but not very much anymore. People are much more aware. But there's much more the city needs to do to meet that federal clean water mandate. Again, an unfunded mandate. Here's an example of some of the things we do in the community and some things that people don't always understand. Up in the left-hand corner, you see Officer Hannibal assisting with the medical care of a young child who had an incident that required immediate care. Most people think of the police officers as being law enforcement, traffic enforcement, be there to take a report after a burglary or something. But the fire department, we see them also as our first line of defense. Firefighters are typically training or they're working in the station maintaining their equipment or they're out doing fire prevention in a business. But the officers on the police department are actually patrolling neighborhoods. So oftentimes while we're on this end of town, they may be in the iron, the tracks on the north end of town here, and they can get there quite quickly, assess a patient, provide the information to the paramedics, and have a much more rapid care system. On the lower left-hand corner, you see a police car, and I've been telling people, you know, it looks beautiful, but like a book, don't judge it by its cover. Same car, and he's driving it all night long. So they pretty much only stop for short periods of time during briefing, maybe when they're parked on the side of the road, but oftentimes even when they're parked, the engine is still remaining idling, prepared for that next response. And so they get a lot of hours. It may have 80 to 100,000 miles when it needs to be replaced, but it has the number of hours of engine time as maybe a car with 200,000. So again, it's an emergency response vehicle that we see needs to have a depreciation fund so we can maintain the replacement of those vehicles. The last 2 years, they've been unable to replace any vehicles. As the fire department, we've been in the same situation for quite some time. Upper right-hand corner, just an example of a recent rollover on the highway. You see a reserve engine on the right-hand side. That's a 1983 model, 23 years old. And the one on the left is a 1995 model, 11-year-old engine, first out engine. But it's a good example of showing fire, police, ambulance, everybody working together for the common good here in our community. Lower right-hand corner, I think most of you can relate to this. That, to me, was a pretty sad sight when I walk in here. Used to have somebody behind the desk that would reserve a room or a class or give you information. Nowadays, you walk into Parks and Rec, and this is what you see closed up. And thank you for hunting for us to find us to give your business to. Now, why must we act now? Why are we in the situation we are? One of the reasons is that California has been taking money from the city for about 12 years, and that amounts to $7 million. You know, you think about that, that's about $583,000 a year just pulled out of our revenues and put into the states to take care of issues that they've had. And it's money that we haven't gotten back, nor will we probably ever see. Their revenues aren't meeting their expenditures. They can raise the price of an item. The city can't do that. So we have to look at other ways of generating revenues. And we've done just about every method we can think of, and now we're at that point where we need to consider something else, and that's where the council will be considering a half a percent sales tax increase in July. They'll make a decision. If they choose to go for it, it would go on to the November ballot. Other reasons that the city is not as solvent as it used to be is the power plant's not running as often as it had been in previous years. One reason a lot of people think the city should be flush is property taxes. Our property values, our homes have gone up in value, and when those sell, there's the monthly or the annual tax, the property tax that everybody pays. The amount of tax that the city receives from that, though, is 10% of the 1% that you pay on your property taxes. So it's not a lot. 90% of the money from your property taxes goes to the state, the county, and the schools. So the city's just receiving that 10%. Now, if we were to go for a half-cent sales tax, that half-cent sales tax would generate about $750,000 for the city. It's a tax that is kept locally. It's not going to be shared with the state, the county, or the schools. It's one that stays here. We don't have to share that half cent. It equates to about 50 cents on a $100 purchase, so it's not a lot. And it's one of those things where visitors to our city actually pay a third of it. A third of the sales tax that the city receives right now comes from MIMA costs, but personnel costs are ongoing. The maintenance of buildings are ongoing, and that sale of that property is one time, so we can't keep dipping in as we've done there. The city's forgone repairs to the fire station. It's forgone maintenance in the streets. It's forgone maintenance on buildings, and we've reduced police officers and code enforcement officers and many other services within the community. So we're addressing that issue by bringing the measure, the attention of the potential of bringing that measure to the community, to you. We're asking all of you what your opinions are. We're asking what your priorities are. When we hand out the survey, you'll see there's some things listed there. Most of the items, actually all the items on that list, were the priorities that were established through a phone survey. The city paid a company to survey the community. They had 400 respondents on this phone survey, and these were the priorities taken off of that survey. We want to prioritize further, and that's why we're trying to talk to leaders in the community. One, so you're well educated in what the city's issues are, but also so when people talk to you, you'll be able to respond to them as to why the city is pursuing a sales tax and help us identify the priorities. Neighboring cities in our county are also pursuing this half a percent sales tax. The only city in our county that is not is Paso Robles. They have said that they have plenty of money, and that's not a problem for them, so they're not going to pursue it. But the rest of us have quite a few needs that need to be met. As far as the level of tax in Morro Bay, we're at 7.25. 7.25 is the lowest sales tax in the state. If you go to Santa Barbara, they've been at 7.75 for quite some time. If you go up into the Bay Area and Sacramento, you're going to see areas where it's at 8%, up to as high as 8.5%. So we would still be fairly low at 7.75%, but it would be a real help to our general fund. So if sales tax is successful in November, how are we going to benefit? All those things I've been saying that we haven't been able to do, we're going to try and address those. And it'll be up to the community to make the priorities known to the city council. Again, with the survey as one method, we're hoping to do another survey by mail to all the voters in town so that we can have some specific priorities established. But these are the ones that we see right now: replace our aging fire station, provide the firefighters the equipment they need, that includes the fire engine replacement, renovate and staff that North Morro Bay fire station, repair potholes, maintain the streets, repair the storm drains, add those filters that are required by the Federal Clean Water Act, restore parks and maintenance, park programs and maintenance to the buildings, maintain and replace emergency vehicles, that's the fire and police both, and then restore the police officer positions that we've lost both at the high school and in code enforcement and elsewhere. One big question is, how do we maintain fiscal accountability of this? You know, it's essential that the citizens feel comfortable that the council's spending the money appropriately. So the plan is to have an independent oversight committee established that would watch over that $750,000 that's generated by this half-cent sales tax. And they would make sure that the council is following the priorities that have been set by the community for spending that money. And raise a big red flag if they're not. And our community is pretty vocal. Members of your group, members of the community, nobody's afraid to get up and let the council know if something's not right. So we would anticipate that to continue and really be watchful of how that money is being used. Additionally, there will be annual audits, so that should buy the clarity that the community wants, and you'll be able to see exactly what that money is being spent for. So what can you do, and you at home that are watching? Essentially, talk to your city council members, let them know what your priorities are, let them know how you feel about a potential revenue increase. Get a survey, a feedback form, fill it out, and turn that into Bridget Bauer at the city administrator's office. And with that, I'm going to conclude, and I'll turn it over for questions. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the commission might have. Thank you.
Any questions?
I have one.
Pass some of these around. Yes, Mr. House.
Yes. Who would appoint the Citizens Oversight Committee?
Typically, committees are appointed by the city council. So I would anticipate it that it would be similar to the appointments that are done in a commission or in any other type of situation where we need community input.
I'm just curious, isn't the city council our independent citizens oversight committee? I thought that's What was their function?
Well, the city council obviously has the final authority, and they have the final word, but we have commissions like with the Parks and Rec. We have commissions with the Harbor Department. We have Public Works Advisory Boards. They're all there to help keep the council informed and keep them on track. Likewise, this financial independent committee would be trying to keep them on track with this $750,000, keep them focused on the priorities that the community had established.
So this, the committee would only be for this half-cent?
Correct.
Sales tax?
Correct.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, I think also that the independent audit or the independent oversight committee was also something that in the telephone poll came out rather loud and strong, that people were interested, but they would certainly like an independent committee to oversee that money that was generated.
Correct. That's quite correct. Essentially, it's a watchdog watching our watchdogs. You know, city council is watching out for all of us, but it's having a backup. It's having, you know, a second evaluator just standing in the wings to make sure that things are being done right.
And so before this half-cent sales tax is voted on, we won't be able to tell exactly where this money is going to be spent.
Correct. It's a general fund tax, and a general fund tax requires a simple majority vote. If we were to say we only want this money to go for police cars or for the police department, then it would require a two-thirds majority vote and could only be used for that. Being a general fund tax, we can deal with some of the shortfalls and issues in the fire department. We can deal with some in the police department, and we can deal with some in Parks and Rec, and have a little bit left over for paving some streets, or, you know, whatever the priorities end up showing, you know, wherever they end up being established.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks, Mike.
Again, if you want to fill out one of these forms, go to the fire department and get one to fill out. Okay. The next item on the agenda is a discussion of the date change for our meetings.
First of all, good evening, commissioners. This item has come before you. What staff is recommending is the possibility, or actually a commission discussion about the possibility of changing your meeting from the second Thursday of the month to the first Thursday of the month, and we would also be changing our location at the Veterans Memorial Building. One of the key reasons we would like the commission to consider that is that it would eliminate the need for a setup and tear down of this particular room. This room is used as our senior nutrition room, and so during the day we have round tables out Monday through Friday, so the setup is basically to take those tables down and put these tables up, and it's fairly time-consuming. If we were to change our meeting to the first Thursday of the month, it would mean that we would be going in front of the Harbor Advisory Board, which meets at 7. I've talked to the Harbor Director, and he is not interested at this point in moving his meeting forward any hour, so we would have time. I think it's important, though, that the commission understand that we would be limited to a two-hour meeting. I know that makes some of you unhappy. But it's something to consider in situations where we have had busy agendas. We probably have that a couple times a year where we could potentially go over 2 hours. And I think there's a couple of solutions that we could use in those cases. Perhaps we could switch our reports to another meeting. We could continue our meeting, but it's something to consider, and certainly if the commission's not comfortable with this, we can stay here at our time. So I'm throwing that out to the commission for discussion, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Any questions for Andrea? Okay, discussion?
I think it's a good idea. It saves money, it saves work, and we very seldom have our meetings go over 2 hours, and if we do go over 2 hours, then I think we should just continue our reports to the next meeting.
Or would we have the opportunity as well to extend it? You know, I mean, would they be willing to let us, you know, go for another 15 minutes if we had to, given it sounds like a very rare occasion? that the meetings would run over 2 hours?
That's a good question. I did talk to Rick Algert a little bit about that, and he seemed to indicate that, you know, if there was an extreme situation where we thought we could end up in about 10 minutes, it wouldn't be a huge deal. I think the concern would be if we were doing that on a monthly basis. But I think if it was a few and far between, it wouldn't be a great deal. And we'd add a few people to our audience that way as well.
Jeff?
Yeah. How often do we know in advance? I've only been to a handful of these meetings so far. Say we knew that a longer meeting was coming up. Is there any possible way that we could, say, begin it earlier, too?
Absolutely. We generally have a pretty good feel of when we're going to have an issue that's going to draw in a number of people, and that's generally when we have our long meetings, when we have the public here. So we do know that when it happens, it's generally not a surprise. So we certainly could start earlier. In those situations, we could certainly change our location, and we could meet at a different building where we had an availability to go over. It would be an extra setup, but it would only be one time a year versus, you know, 12 times a year that we do setup. So that's certainly a possibility as well.
Joan?
I like the idea. I think we should do it.
Okay. Yeah, I like the idea, too. I think it's good. When we do have something like public hearing where it's going to be long, we can just ahead of time move the reports to the next month.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? I mean, why just wait for the meeting to see how it's going to end? And then we know we have extra time. We can also look at hour and a half into the meeting, see if we are going to go long, and maybe we can at that time say, hey, we can go on till 7 few minutes, or maybe we can put up for a vote to move to the next meeting, depending what the public hearing is. And I think it should be okay.
Okay. How would someone like to make a motion?
I make a motion that we move our meeting to the first Thursday of the month at 5:00 at the in front of the Harbor Advisory Board meeting at the Veterans Building.
I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Will this start next month?
Well, that's kind of what our next item is about. So okay. Hold off on that.
All right. The next item is scheduling of the annual parks tour.
On a yearly basis, we ask the Recreation and Parks Commission to join us on a parks tour where we go through the park system. And as you'll see when we get into our next staff report, it's going to be it's important every year, but it will be especially important this year. Generally, the commission likes to have the parks tour during the summer months where it stays light a little bit longer. It's generally 2 or 3 hours. We take the trolley. We also extend an invitation to the city council as well as other boards and commissions and whoever wants to join us. Staff's recommendation is that we do it in lieu of a meeting. We've generally done that. If you would like to do that this year, we could use July as the month that we go on the parks tour. We're available. We'd like to keep it on Thursdays. If we do the 6th or the 13th, we can do it in lieu of a meeting. You can have a meeting on the 6th and do it on the 13th. I don't think we're having any pressing issues for next month, so we're looking at sometime in July. Or if the commission is more available, we could go to August for the parks tour. But we leave that open for discussion for you.
Okay. Are people available in July for the parks tour?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, should be okay.
Is there any preference for you, Andrea, between the 6th and the 13th?
It doesn't matter to me. The Harbor Advisory Board is not going to be meeting in the month of July, so if we choose it to do in lieu of a meeting, it doesn't really matter. We can do it the 6th or the 13th if we're not going to meet anyway.
Any preference for the commissioners, which day?
The 6th would be the week of the 4th of July. Would that conflict with vacations or anything? Or?
Not on this side.
Yeah.
Who nothing leaves here. Morro Bay for the 4th of July? Nobody leaves Morro Bay.
Can't get out.
Should we?
I move July 6th.
Yeah. July 6th is good.
We have the annual parks tour on July 6th.
I second.
In lieu of a meeting.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. We'll have the tour on the 6th. At what time do we want to do this?
We can start at 5.
Okay.
We'll see if the trolley's available in front of this building.
Okay. Next item is initial discussion on the park, on park reservation policies.
And my apologies, I'm going to be sending down the Muni Code section that I said that I attached that I don't believe I did, so I'm going to send that down to the commissioner to include. This is a going to be a, I think, a maybe a lengthy item, not in terms of tonight, but in general, maybe a couple of months to really flesh out what we're doing with our parks reservation system. And I would really encourage you to ask questions, because it's, as this item really started when our staff, our division head staff, who for the most part has been here, you know, 8-10 years plus, talked about our park reservation system. And we found that even within the staff, we had some inconsistencies and some things that we're doing differently within our staff people. Not horrendously differently, but it became very clear that we aren't consistent through our park system, and I think that it would certainly be nice if we could be. We do have different parks, and different parks have different amenities, but I think if we had a consistent reservation system, it would be clear. The staff report hopefully is understandable, and I'll just go through it, but I would encourage questions. And if we don't have them tonight, think about it and bring them up for the parks tour, and then I think in August we'll be making some determination on setting and maybe amending, or really just maybe cleaning up the policies on reservations. But basically, pursuant to the Muni Code section, we have use rules available for public parks. Throughout the park system, as I said, we have different reservable areas for each park, and they're basically due in some way to park design and the amenities that are included in the parks. In the last several years, we've had a significant increase in the number of requests for public park use for weddings and receptions, and typically those are for large areas in the parks that people would like to reserve. Our reservation system doesn't really fit that in terms of what it says that we're doing. So in the staff report, and then as I said, through the parks tour, hopefully we can kind of flesh out what we're doing. Initially, the public parks in Morro Bay were predominantly set up on a first-come, first-served basis, which they should be. Parks should be available to the general public. But we have set up a couple of group areas specifically for reservations. We have three group areas, and generally they're group barbecue areas that people can come in and reserve. And they're the Del Mar Meadow area, the Del Mar Hillside area, and the barbecue area at Lila Kaiser Park. Those are considered reservable areas. We did have the Del Mar Creekside area, but as you'll recall, it's currently underwater with the movement of Alva Paul Creek, and the table has been removed, and it's no longer a reservable group area. Tidelands Park also did have a reservable area when it first opened in 1992, but then the commission in 1993-94 decided that they would like to have that park available on a first-come, first-served basis, so they ended that, and there's no specific reservable group barbecue area at Tidelands. So, again, we have the three, two at Del Mar and one at Kaiser Park. And I should say that those areas are fairly heavily used. We've been switching all our registrations from one system to another, so we've gotten very knowledgeable about what current reservations we have. And Hillside and Kaiser are pretty much throughout the summer reserved on a regular basis for those group barbecue areas, traditionally for things like birthday parties and family reunions and that sort of thing. Currently, the practice that we're doing is that we have two separate permits available for reservations of the areas that we just talked about, those three areas we talked about. And that's a one-day use permit, which we've attached that form for you. And basically, that's used for small events, less than 75 people. And specific examples include family barbecues or birthday parties. Basically, the permittee completes the permit. They pay the use fee, which is fairly small, and they have the area. They have that reservable area for that period of time. The other permit that we have is the public area use permit, and it's used for larger events, more than 75 people. And generally for things like wedding receptions and weddings and that sort of thing. The public area use permit is always also used for things like reservations of streets and parking lots and the Morro Rock parking lot, but we're really not going to talk about that tonight. For instance, the Harbor Festival uses a public area use permit for their event, but we're really going to strictly stick to the parks this evening. As we talked a little bit, a relatively new request that we have been getting is the request to use an entire park or a large portion of the park for an event. Outside those three reservable areas, people want to use larger areas of the park. And a good example is Tidelands Park for weddings. I think last year we had about seven or eight weddings in Tidelands Park, and they wanted to reserve the park. So what staff has ended up doing is we've extended the public area use permit process to allow people to rent or to reserve entire parks. And what we do with that is we put on the caveat that you've reserved the park, but it still remains open to the public. The restrooms remain open to the public. You can't reserve the playground, the sidewalks, the pathways. They're all open to the public. So you have your reservation, but the park remains open to the public. And that's worked very well because people have generally been respectful. What we're seeing, though, is that the permittees are increasingly inquisitive about, well, what area do I have? And our answer is generally you've got a turf area, but we haven't really delineated any of that out. And people are concerned because they want to know their boundaries. They want to have more specifics than we have been able to give them based on the policies that we have. And that's why we were bringing this forward. We have used the public area use permit process for areas. Specifically, we've used it for Tidelands Park very frequently. We've used it for Cloisters Park. We've used it for North Point Park. And we've used it for Bayshore Parks. So all those parks, again, don't have group reservable areas, but we're allowing reservations of the parks. And that's something we'd like to continue to do because we think it's important for use of the park, but we'd like to just be able to have some better, I guess, rules on it and some parameters. After we discussed this at our staff meeting, we brought up a couple of situations or questions that came up in terms of what we're doing and what should we be doing or how would it work better. And again, these are things for you to think about and after we go on the parks tour, kind of look at what we've done and where we should go with it. The couple of things that our staff talked about is, would it be beneficial to designate particular areas in the parks, as we talked about the turf area at Tidelands, as the reservable area? So if you want to have a wedding at Tidelands Park, this is the area that you can reserve, and just be very clear about it. I think that would probably be beneficial. Yeah, it would put some parameters on it for the people that are renting the park. And then the other question that came up at our staff meeting is, would it be beneficial to designate some parks as a first-come, first-serve only, or designate some parks as only reservable? For instance, let's go backwards on that. Perhaps you want to just keep Bayshore Bluffs as only a first-come, first-serve. If somebody came to us and said, could I reserve Bayshore Bluffs, maybe an answer could be or would be no. Bayshore is only available on a first-come, first-serve basis. So those are some things to think about. Again, it's been fairly inconsistent. We'd like to clean it up. It's got a lot of fingers that go places. And as we talk about it on our parks tour, I'm sure that more questions will come up as they did with our staff meeting. But this is kind of as a first blush, what we're doing with it and what we're requiring. I see that we will probably continue to have requests for our parks for big events like weddings and receptions. And I think perhaps in the future, maybe in a few years, we may even put a limit on, we'll obviously come back to the commission, but we may need to put a limit on, for instance, the number of weddings you can have or big events you can have at Tidelands Park. If we were having an event every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Tidelands, I think we would have a huge outcry from the general public that was still allowed to use most of the things at the park, but they couldn't use the big turf area. So I think that there'll be some point where we, as a community and as a commission, might say, you know, too much. It needs to be more open. So those are some things to think about. Again, I'm happy to answer your questions. If you come up with a question I can't answer tonight, I'll certainly get back to you for the parks tour, or if you have questions on, you know, what we're doing with our permits or so on and so forth. I should say that the public area use permits are more expensive than the one-day use. The one-day use is generated to just be kind of an easy reservation. And then I think the other thing to note is that those three reservable areas that we talked about at Del Mar and at Kaiser, if they are not reserved, they are then available on a first-come, first-served basis. And what we've tried to do, if you reserve an area, one of those three, you're given a small sticker that you can put on the reserved sign at the park. So, for instance, if Commissioner Winter showed up with her basket and set up at 10 o'clock in the morning and didn't see the sticker wasn't there, and Commissioner House decided or had come in and had a reservation, it gives, if the sticker system is used, then it gives Commissioner Winter the idea that she shouldn't spread out her picnic basket because Commissioner House, okay, although he might share, Commissioner House had already reserved the area. And that's worked fairly well. People have been generally respectful, as they have been with the big events that have happened in the park. So hopefully I haven't completely confused everybody. Again, we would like to clean it up. We'd like to make it a little more consistent. And I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay, anybody want to go with questions?
I have a question. Like for Tidelands, for example, I'm just using Tidelands because of the location and stuff. Something like that, would something like considering two weekends, like let's say first and third weekend of the month, could be used to reserve for weddings, and let's say then the second and fourth wouldn't be? That lets people know that, you know, we can what weekends to use, and it lets the residents know that they know that they can plan their little birthday party and those weekends will be free. Something like that be considered? Or
we can certainly consider that. At this point, we haven't, we're in staff's opinion, I don't think we're quite there yet, because we haven't had that huge influx. But I think already we've got, I don't know, three or four weddings this summer. So that might be something to consider in the future.
Yeah.
But at this point, I think we're okay. But certainly, we may be going there.
Yeah. Or used for summer months, you know, July and August type thing.
Any, Chrissy?
Jim? Do we have a mechanism for the public to be made aware of when reservations of...
Well, interesting that you ask, because I am happy, and you'll find out soon in our update, that we are actually live with our registration system. And through our registration system, we have a – I'm looking at Barb because I'm pretty sure I'm right. We have a facility availability program, which I believe you can look online if a park is available or not. You can't reserve parks online, but you can see if it is available. So if you were Friday night, you could check it out. It's going to take a little bit of training. Well, we're still being trained, but it's going to take a little bit of training, but there is now a system to do that.
Thanks.
June?
Since Tidelands has been like a first-come, first-served basis for both weddings and birthday parties, and I know I've had a pirate party out there with like 44-year-olds, I'm wondering if there's been any clashes and if we've considered, you know, when we consider... looking at a reservation area for weddings, we should maybe then reconsider reserving for birthday parties as well, because perhaps you wouldn't want 44-year-olds at your 250-person wedding. I mean, I'm just saying. You might, but if you were a preschool teacher. But maybe we should keep that in our mind and look at all that when we go around, too.
At this point, I won't say there haven't been any clashes. There haven't been any clashes that we've been notified of. There certainly could have been, but it's certainly something to consider.
Anybody else?
Andrea, I was wondering, when we do our parks tour, you'll have some sort of a number of events that have happened at each park.
I can certainly provide that.
Yeah, that would be nice to know. Yeah. Which ones have been used the most, and what time of year, and that kind of thing.
I'm assuming, Andrea, too. Obviously, this is a balance of, you know, use of parks by the public and providing services to the public for special events and so forth. And so I'm imagining you're weighing, you know, the pros and cons of having a lot of reservation options against the public being able to use those parks freely and not feel like they're invading someone else's turf. Is that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if we go back to 1993, 94, I think that's one of the reasons why the commission, I went back to the minutes and I looked at those, and I think that's one of the reasons why the commission decided that Tidelands should just be open. And it was before we had any weddings or anything there. Weddings are in probably the last two or three years, because there was so much use at Tidelands. I think there were some clashes, because people would show up and they would have a reservation, and then somebody else would show up, and it got a little bit gnarly. So certainly it is a balancing act.
And the revenues from the reservations, what do they represent in terms of our overall?
Overall, we generate about $45,000 in facilities and parks together. I'm guessing, and I can bring that to you at our parks tour, I'm guessing that maybe $8,000 might be from parks, maybe. Maybe a little bit more. I'll bring that. That's an interesting question, and I don't know it off the top. But it's a heavy, heavy, if you look at facilities and parks together, obviously facilities are revenue generate much more. But parks might be 8 or 10. We'll take a look at that. And that's everything from your, you know, your big 250-person wedding where your permit might be upwards of, well, they're pretty inexpensive, maybe $300 to your barbecue with your family that's, you know, 23.
Any other questions?
Are you going to want to go to, like, one form to fill out for both day use and large area? Is that what kind of you want to head to also than both?
I'm sorry. I think we're going to stick with two because the public area use permit also requires liability insurance. And generally, your public area use permit is for your more involved event, your wedding with your alcohol and your live band, versus the one-day use. You actually can still have alcohol with your one-day use permit, but if you've got live music or you're building a structure or something to walk under as you get married or you're having a sales or anything like that, you've got to do a public area use permit. So that permit is generally for more involved events that sometimes actually require other departments to look in on them. So I think we're happy with the permits at this point.
Do we know how many of the weddings are out of town versus in town residents, and is there a differentiation in fees?
There is a differentiation in fees. Basically, our fee structure goes from city events, which are no fee. Then we've got nonprofit groups that are the second lowest, and residents, and then non-residents, and then profit making. And we can get. We'll bring that information to you. I think we're probably about half and half on resident versus non-resident weddings. But we'll bring that.
Does this fit into our special events policy, or since it's not a public event, it doesn't?
Yeah, it's really separate because we're just sticking with the parks. And I looked at that. It's a good question, and we're taking that policy to the council actually on Monday night. But by definition of what a special event is, it's probably not going to touch on this one.
It's special to the people getting married.
Yes, it is.
Very special. Okay. So on this item, we'll just carry this over?
Yeah, just informational, no actions required. I do encourage commissioners, though, if you think about it, anytime between now and the parks tour and you've got specific questions, give me a jingle. I'll bring this information back to you so you'll have a good feel for what we're doing when we go out there on the parks tour.
Okay. Next item is the status report.
Lots of things are happening. Summer is generally, well, I think all the time is busy, but summer seems to be, we've got a lot of special things going on. First of all, our summer hours begin in our Teen Center Escape Park on June 16th. The Teen Center will be open Monday through Friday, 1 to 7, and Saturday, 1 to 10. We are closed on Sundays at the Teen Center. As well, the skate park hours will expand on June 16th. We'll be open Monday through Saturday, 12 to 5, and closed on Sunday. We are, interestingly, we've had a little bit of movement on the Del Mar Tennis Court project. As you know, the project is now under the cap. Once we get the funding, it goes over to the capital projects manager, and the capital projects manager has a number of capital projects that he's currently working on, including some of the things that Chief Pond talked about, fire stations and such. The council has asked the capital projects manager to bring a list of capital projects to the June 26th council meeting, where they'll be looking at priorities. And that's going to be the tennis court is going to be in that discussion because it is a funded capital project at this point. So they'll be talking a little bit about that, and we'll keep you posted as to what happens. Again, that's on June 26th. We have held the first two public hearings for the North Point Assessment District process, and we've held the first hearing for the Cloisters. The Cloisters assessment process, we did not take the engineer's report at the same time for Cloisters as we did for North Point. We're presenting that on Monday night on the 12th. And then the final public hearing, which is the protest hearing where people generally come and speak out about the assessment, is scheduled for both of those assessment districts for, boy, I put June 24th again. I can't get that off my brain. It's June 26th, 2006, at the council meeting. Unfortunately, the expenditure printout for the month of May is not available until our following meeting. It comes out on the 10th of the month. We are doing some interesting things with staffing at Youth Services. As you're aware, the Kids Camp program is fairly intensive, and we're in the process of hiring staff for that program. We're hiring about 10 or 12 new staff to join our existing staff for a total of about 18 staff over the summertime. Hopefully you've been on our website. We're still fine-tuning what we're doing. I think the summer tides, which covers programs for July, August, and September, will be out very soon. The spring tides is on the web. It covers for the month of June. A lot of camps going on. We've got golf camp and slow blues baseball camp, basketball camp. I'm sure I'm going to miss some. So take a look at that and see how we're doing there. We did have registration began for the summer kids camp program. That began on May 30th. The registration is a little bit different for kids camp than it is for kids club. For kids camp, we basically open the registration and then take it as people come in. We are having a lot of people come in. Generally, we don't fill up for the summer. However, I'll probably say that this year, and then we'll fill up for this year. But we do divide it into two groups of kids, and so that registration is happening. The program starts on June 26th for summer kids camp program, and that's a great program. The children have had to complete kindergarten through fifth grade, going into sixth grade. They're doing a lot of interesting trips this year. We did, as you'll recall, last year our kids club registration was dramatically changed last year, and we continued on with this year. That program, we had a registration night. It was on last Thursday night, I believe, the 1st of June, for our registration by the end of the summer. So their registration for fall, they'll be ready to go in the fall. We're still fine-tuning what we're doing. It was a long night. We had people there till about 8 o'clock. We started at 6:15. But it went fairly well. The mood was pretty good. So I think we'll continue on with that registration process. Just as you might recall, we do as you come in, you draw a number for your place in line, and we felt that was the fairest way to do it versus somebody that maybe is able to camp out in the parking lot starting maybe at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The registration was in the evening, so it worked fairly well, and we try to let all the parents know that's how we do it, so when they come to the registration, they're not surprised. As I said, we actually went live with our public with our active.com program on June 1st. Everyone's excited. If anybody told us what it would be like getting all our data in the computer before we did it, we never would have done it. But we're done now, and I think it's going to be very worthwhile. Just the ability to check facilities, to register online. People seem to be pretty pleased with that, and it's going well. We're still kind of fine-tuning what reports we need to do, and we're running both our systems now in tandem, so that's kind of interesting. But it's gone well, and I think it'll be it's definitely going to be a step in the right direction. We have met, as this commission might recall, when the entrance sculpture was put in, there was discussion of a maintenance agreement with the sculpture team, and we have restarted those meetings with that group and talking about maintenance of the sculpture. And there is a water feature on the sculpture, but at this point, the water is not going where it's supposed to be going, so they're kind of fine-tuning that. And park staff is continuing to meet with them, and I think that's a program to go out and see the competition. It's generally against the county guards, the county junior lifeguard program, and it's just great to see the kids out there swimming and running in the water. T-ball coach pitch program ended on June 2nd with the barbecue. We had about 40 kids. They each received a participation medal, and the program seemed to go fairly well this year. I believe if we have not started construction on our parking lot lights, we will in the next few days. We were held back a little bit with delivery of the lights, but those should be going in at Kaiser Park. We are taking our special event policy to the council on June 12th, which is Monday night. That'll certainly be an interesting discussion, because we've also included some information on liability insurance, which has been a question that has been going around a number of different meetings, liability requirements. The special event policy, I think it was the commission, I think you finished it in February or January perhaps, and it's, I think, a new business item on the agenda. I think one of the probably the best things the commission did was invite the event organizers from some of the events in town to come and talk, because we've got that information. So hopefully that'll go well. And then I wanted to bring the commission up to speed on the off-leash dog park. The city council at their May 22nd meeting motioned for the Morro Bay Pups, which is the nonprofit group that's been formed, to proceed with a permit process for a temporary use permit for a fenced off-leash dog park. as well as continue to check sites for a permanent location. What they're talking about is a fenced off-leash dog park in the area where the tennis courts are master planned. I'm not sure if they're moving forward with a temporary use permit. The temporary use permit would be good for, I've just listed some upcoming events on the bottom for the commission to take a look at. I think that concludes my staff report on status. I'm happy to answer questions.
Questions for Andrea?
Has anybody ever considered, for the kids camp, taking the kids to a Blues game over in San Luis Obispo? They do some great things with kids over there. They have them run the bases and get dizzy. And
do they do daytime games?
Yeah. It's very inexpensive, too. You could probably get free tickets.
We haven't, but we will.
It's a great place to go.
I have a question, Andrea. On the online registration, which is very exciting, I'm a big web user. What are we doing, or have you guys put in any information about promoting use of the web and maybe what the benefits are? I know you spend time filling forms out. I'm sure that one of the benefits is we don't have to maybe repeat information when we're going online. Have you given any thought to how to get the message out to the public on the availability of online registration?
We haven't. I won't say we haven't done a good job of that yet. It's been pretty limited. We've done some press releases. We've announced it at council. We've sent out probably the biggest thing that we've done is sent out flyers to all our current instructors to hand out the registration forms that would enable the family to set up an account online. So that's at this point, that's where we've limited it to. I think it's listed on our website, but in order to go to the website, you're probably already there. So we're certainly open to ideas on how to market it better.
Okay, great. I'll give that some thought. I'm certainly thinking that.
Oh, and Barb just threw this.
Okay. Youth Services Division participation report.
Item D1, I don't have anything particular to point out to you. Our numbers are pretty, they're pretty similar to last year. I'm not too concerned about our participation overall. As well with our facilities and parks, we're slightly down from last year in our usage. Again, not a huge concern because our revenues are pretty, they're pretty online or even to what we were last year. So, again, not huge concerns. I'm happy to answer questions that you have on those.
Any questions on this report?
No. Oh, motion to accept. Do we have to accept
we'll
those?
We'll do them all together.
Okay.
The facilities and parks report.
Again, I don't have a lot of information on that. I'm happy to answer questions if you have them. And we do not have a sports report this month. And I apologize.
Okay. Any questions for Andrea on this report?
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah. Motion to accept for files. Second. One and D3.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Any commissioner? Oh, let me see. There's no senior report because they meet next week. Any other commissioners have any reports? No? Nope. Do I have a motion for adjournment?
Can I
ask excuse
declaration
me.
Declaration agenda items?
Yes, declaration of
I'm not sure if this is an agenda item yet, but this year's budget coming up, can we have a report on the director of Rex and Parks salary and what's actually happening here?
However, our department has received or may be in line to receive some additional part-time funding in order to take some of the hit away from our front desk loss, and that's still a budget item at this point, and it hasn't been approved, but that's what we're looking for.
So we will have no director of Rex and Park?
Your director of Recreation and Parks will reside within the assistant city manager position. So all my job duties, I'll still be performing, but no, there will not be a Recreation and Parks director in this department full-time. It's not a position that's funded.
Interesting.
Can I ask you to open public comment?
Okay. Shall we open public comment again?
Sure.
Public comments open.
Thank you. Nancy Castle, Mike Pond and I are making the circuit of the meetings this month. I'm here to talk about the recreation element of the Historical Society of Morro Bay's book, which is called Morro Bay. They, two members of the society, my brother and Gary Rehm, Roger Castle is my brother, put together this book, spent many hours. It's full of great pictures about the history of Morro Bay and includes things about recreation over the years that have gone on. And I highly recommend everybody purchase a copy. It's a fundraiser for the Historical Society so that they can increase the preservation of the valuable items that are in Morro Bay and record our history. There's also going to be a signing party at Coalesce Bookstore on July 2nd, and you could get an autographed copy. All right, we'll get some down there, too.
Yeah, we take some at
all the right.
hotel.
Excellent. Thank you.
I have to applaud Mr. Crabb. He's my daughter's third-grade teacher, and I've learned more about the history of Morro Bay from the assignments and the documents that he's prepared about Morro Bay than I otherwise would have known. So I'm sure the other third-grade teachers have that on the curriculum, so I don't mean to point him out, but it's great. Learned a lot through the elementary school.
Okay. Any other future agenda items that anyone would like to suggest? Okay. Now I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Move that we adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So next month we'll take the trolley.
From here.
From here.